Mary Kucha, a son or daughter of noble family who wishes to practice the profound Prajnaparamita, should see in this way. Seeing the five skandhas to be empty of nature. Form is emptiness. Emptiness also is form. Emptiness is no other than form. Form is no other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, perception, formation, and consciousness are emptiness. Thus, Shariputra, all dharmas are emptiness. There are no characteristics. There is no birth and no cessation. There is no impurity and no purity. There is no decrease and no increase. Therefore, Shariputra, in emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no perception, no formation, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no appearance, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, no dharmas, no eye, dhatu, up to no mind, dhatu, of dharmas, no mind, consciousness, dhatu, no ignorance, no end of ignorance, up to no old age and death, no end of old age and death. Death, no suffering, no origin of suffering, no cessation of suffering, no path, no wisdom, no attainment, and no non-attainment. Therefore, Shariputra, since the bodhisattvas have no attainment, they abide by means of Prajnaparamita. Since there is no obscuration of mind, there is no fear. They transcend falsity and attain complete nirvana. All the Buddhas of the three times by means of Prajnaparamita fully awaken to unsurpassable, true, complete enlightenment. Therefore, the great mantra of Prajnaparamita, the mantra of great insight, the unsurpassed mantra, the unequal mantra, the mantra that calms all suffering should be known as true since there is no deception. Prajnaparamita mantra is said in this way. Te ata om gate gate para gate para sangate bodhisoha. Thus, Shariputra, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, should train in the profound Prajnaparamita. Then the Blessed One arose from that samadhi and praised Noble Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, saying, good, good, O son of noble family. Thus it is, O son of noble family. Thus it is. One should practice the profound Prajnaparamita just as you have taught, and all the Tathagatas will rejoice. When the Blessed One had said this, Venerable Shariputra and Noble Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, that whole assembly in the world, the gods, humans, asuras, and Gandharvas, rejoiced and praised the words of the Blessed One. Agasamara de Jandara Samara Yavini Adong, Adegate Paragate Parasangati Batiso, Papa Gonjosonji Kai, the Metojeshe, Gotoji, Potoji, Shivotoji, Nagi Bajime, the Mitchu Tanjeja, Tingoyas, Oyeri, and Nunja, Jejo, Yewata, Meton, the Pagent, and the Wata, Tomba, Donji, Munzon, Zonjori. The fundamental ground is scented with incense and strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, the four continents, the sun, and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha land and offer it. May all sentient beings enjoy this pure realm. Holy Lamas, high, wrap the sky of your bodies and massive clouds of knowledge and love. Let them pour upon the earth of your disciples as we are ready a shower of rain, the teachings deep and wide. Ma sambha yidang yi I send forth this jeweled mandala to you, precious Guru. Yedam goro radha mandala gamye radha yami. Sanye jadan jadye janam la janjo bado danye jazo jiragi jnye jive zanandi. Rala benje zanye jubajo. Chodan the ji janam la janjo bado dani jazo ji nagi juni di bezanan ji jola ben ji zanje ju bajo zanje jodan the ji janam la janjo bado dani jazo ji nagi juni Jibbe sonam jijala benji sonji jubajo. So welcome, everybody. Like I said, when we were just getting started, I see there's some, is there a text up? I don't have a mouse right here. Are you around? Oh, okay. All right. I see. Wonderful. Okay. So before I just throw a topic out and then, you know, ask Rinpoche to give us a discussion on that. We're wondering if, you know, because we have a limited amount of time, we wanted to see what folks wanted to talk about, or if there are any questions that they wanted to talk, you guys wanted to talk about. We'll start there. Yes, Alessandra. Oh.
Sorry, I was on mute. Yes, good morning. Sure. Can you speak more on the realm of the hungry ghosts and what that is and how one would identify if they feel they are a hungry ghost and how they would deal with that to combat it?
Okay. Rinpoche, kon dawa ritu chiwa. Kon yida chiwa. Then dawa ritu. Detsu gichi sheronam. The dawa the ewa dan the detsu donda gichi sheronam. Gangin sine konsu tsampa chi shenangai yida yin and hakogumari. Yene the meda yeda gawa, then did the dead sketch a share on our Rinpoche? Daritu?
On what you do, Dunduzon, Nanduzon draw.
Less so.
You are yeda Tundra. Nanduzon?
Less so.
Mela Hamai, Dunduzon, Rodito.
Less so. Jene the conga, Japo, Jugare.
Less so.
Then the Sanjay the Sumbare, the Do Yuribe. Okay. So we find the presentation of the six realms of cyclic existence within this presentation I asked Rinpoche would be found in the scriptures of the sutras. So these six realms of cyclic existence are various realms of rebirth that one can take on. So there are three lower realms and three higher realms. The lower realms are the hell realms, the hungry ghosts, and the animals. The higher realms are the humans, the demigods, and the gods. So these are specific realms that you would be birthed into or have instantaneous arisal into, usually birthed into in some way, or spontaneous arisal into after you die. So if you, whatever your birth you are in right now, say we are humans, we are human beings. So when we die, we would be thrown by our karma into one among those six realms of cyclic existence. And those six realms all have divisions as well. You can look into their very lengthy divisions in the Lamrim Chemo and other sources such as Liberation of the Palm of Your Hand by Popolgo Rinpoche, where you find an extensive explanation and a very detailed discussion about these eerie places, if that's something that's beneficial for you. Some people don't find the descriptions to be as helpful because they maybe seem fire and brimstone-y, but they're just describing a very serious state of being we could all be born into that would be intense amounts of suffering or happiness depending on what we engaged in to make those things happen. So we're all one, you know, moment of not breathing or bleeding too much or our heart not working well enough or any among the various internal organs that can just shut down. And all it takes is for that to happen because the causes for death are many and the causes for life are few. And then based on the state of being at the time of death, we connect with various karmas that give rise to our next rebirth. And our next rebirth will be, according to the Dharma, in any among the six realms of cyclic existence. So the lower realms of hell, hungry ghost, and animal are created by non-virtue. The higher realms of human, demigod, and gods are created by virtue. So when we look at how could they be so different, it's because that there's different karmas that create those different states of existence. And when we say different karmas, we mean different degrees of karma. So the greatest degree of non-virtue gives rise to, so since beginningless time, we've engaged in virtue and non-virtue. And at the time of death, these beginningless seeds somehow connect to our disposition at the time and the various conditions that are around our disposition and very complicated process. I will not even begin to say I completely understand. So at the time of death, so the greatest amount of non-virtue gives rise to a hell realm. A medium degree of non-virtue gives rise to a hungry ghost realm. A small degree of non-virtue gives rise to an animal realm. And then the same is so for degrees or intensities of virtue. The smallest amount of virtue gives rise to human. A medium amount of virtue gives rise to a demigod, and a great amount of virtue gives rise to the gods' realms. So that doesn't mean that as a Buddhist, the gods' realm is where we want to be because it's the highest. So it just means that in terms of happiness versus suffering, the greatest amount of virtue creates the greatest amount of happiness, which within cyclic existence is a god's existence. And the greatest amount of non-virtue gives rise to the worst state of existence, which is a hell realm existence. So that's how Buddhism differentiates the various realms. And in a very summarized way, shows how each among those six are created in dependence upon the virtue and non-virtue and the degree of those non-virtues and virtues that we engage in. Now, it doesn't mean in this life, it could, if we, you know, created a heinous crime, for instance, there's five crimes, you know, like drawing blood from a Buddha or killing one's mother, father, you know, so those kinds of heinous actions, the Buddha said give rise to some kind of real instant negativity. But most of the experiences that we have come from this collection that we've gotten since beginningless time, you know, so we've had, you know, beginningless rebirths that feel just as real and solid and permanent, and the only one that we'll ever have is this one. So we've had beginningless ones of these, that feel just as the only one it could be is this one. And our next life, we will just throw out like a piece of trash this continuum, that this kind of experience that we're having now. And our continuum that's full of these imprints will give rise to something that seems just as real and is just as real for that being, but we won't have any real recognition of this life. And our next life will seem just as real and important and as unique. And we will cling to it as it's the only one if we haven't abandoned the negativities which force us into that view of our experience at all times. No matter if it's a hell-hungry ghost, animal, human, demigod, or God, if we're being forced by our ignorance into the perception that we are grasping at I, it always seems just as real and unique as it does right now for us. So that is basically a summary of, so how would you know if you're a hungry ghost? You'd be a hungry ghost. You'd be in the hungry ghost realm. So they would say, how would you know if you're a hungry ghost? You would have any among the five aggregates that are posited as a being that is a hungry ghost. Just as much as we know we're human beings right now, we're in a human realm. We talk, we associate, we have likeness with other humans. We're definitely not ants. We're definitely not dogs. We can see clear distinctions between the realms, if you will. It's like that, but the hungry ghosts, we don't see that realm. We really only, some realized beings have been able to perceive those realms. But generally speaking, ordinary beings perceive their, as human, their realm and animals, and, you know, distant things and sometimes more or less superstition you can experience, or what they call nando, or some conceptuality that you create an experience out of. But in terms of actually seeing another realm other than human or animal, as a human, it's quite difficult. So we're limited in our perception of those other realms. So we rely on what's called faith, inference through faith, that we develop through studying all the other stuff that's really incontrovertible, and say, well, this stuff that seems to be, you know, extremely hidden phenomenon that we can't perceive has to be true too. And we just have to have faith that it's there until we perceive that it's there directly, which the scholars and the Buddhists assure us we will. So.
Thank you.
Dan has a question.
Dan, true while you're there.
Rinpoche, thank you so much for teaching. Thank you, Jeff. So my question is about understanding the context of the precepts the five precepts of not killing, not stealing, not doing any kind of sexual misconduct, and not lying and things like that. So my friend, he's very staunch about following the precepts like as the letter of the law. But I've had a kind of a debate with him about the meaning of the precepts, because it's my understanding that karma is produced not by, by an action, but by the intention of that action. So for example, there was that story that was told where there was a monk who had psychic awareness on a boat, and he recognized that there was a man that was going to kill everyone on the boat. So to stop that man from receiving negative karma from his action, he ended up deciding to kill him instead, like throwing him overboard. And he was even willing to take on whatever karma that would make so that he would benefit, you know, save the lives of the people on the boat, and he would, you know, help him in some way because he didn't actually do the killing. So basically that teaching to me said that basically the precepts are in general true, but there's always some exception to the rule depending on what the circumstance is. And it's important to have the appropriate context and the appropriate intention about what you're doing. So it's not just that deception itself or like saying something that's untrue to someone else itself causes negative karma. It's that you do that for the with a selfish intention. That's what causes negative karma. But if you deceive someone with a positive intention, like for example, the classic example is if the Nazis come and try to gather the Jews that are in your home, you would say they're not here when they are there. You know, so this is an example, and this is a debate that I was having with him. If you would be willing to clarify this would be very helpful.
Sure. So first off, that Bodhisattva created killing karma, but also created a lot of virtue by that intention and the saving and that clairvoyant understanding. So Buddha in his previous life was a riverboat captain that did those things, but karma was created of killing. It's not just intention, it's also action. There's in order to complete a karma, you have this idea, this intention to do it, then you sever the life if it's killing, and then you rejoice in it. If only one of those factors is there, you've still killed and created the non-virtue of killing. So it's not debatable. When you lie, if you lie and say the deer didn't go that way to the hunter and the deer did, you lied, but you've created more virtue for the generosity of saving a life. So the karma is still there. Those words aren't debatable. Those words just are debatable in terms of potency. Rinpoche, the kon triwa de, the kon de, the genye pai dumba, genye mai dumba, the dumba ma yure. And Dan, trobo, the kelen, the dumba ma yuna, denden dagu, the su chupa yomare, the zun she yomare. Ini Dan kon dasi dangadu. Gar shene dasi dang, gangin serna, the sanje jewangama. The shanchu sembai on dom then they call me ngapja yure then the kon mushe yure kon shanchu semba then kon the me chi me kashe segure den sun san sanje kon seso san shanchu semba kon seso then the kon triwa the gewa nga me gewa ju the shanchu semba the suchuna Ine the Pembu Samadana, the Megewa Sagdue. Yine the Nadi Lasun, the Suchubi lay, Nyun Yun Yure, Yine Gewa Chembu Sasso, Yomaribe.
What thing is it?
The Lasa. So I just told Rinpoche what the whole thing about you debating your friend, and then I explained what I said about that the karma is there. The killing karma is there, the lying karma is there, but the intention now has created another thing that's taking place. When we look at 64, 65, however you want to put it, moments in a second, and we look at all the things taking place and how karma is more difficult to understand than emptiness, and it takes omniscience to understand, we see that in those stories, there is still an action. And I'm sure that those debates are debates that take place, Dan. And if Lobsang Law is here, he could kind of expand upon this perhaps. Maybe it's more in Dulwa, which is, or in Zu, either Vinaya or Abhidharma at the end of your studies where they start to kind of really get into that. I'm not sure, but the Ne Genye. So the lay precepts are no killing, no stealing, no lying, no sexual misconduct, and no alcohol. So those are the five. So they're pretty clear points. You know, it's like don't lie, and then they define what lying is, and they say don't steal. They say that it's taking something of value that you weren't given permission to take, whatever that means, is stealing. You know, so all these actions are defined. And, you know, not drinking alcohol, not to drink alcohol, you know. But if it's in an initiation and you taste it, it's been transformed tantrically into something else. In Tantra, you see strange things. But we really need to kind of abide in the ordinary. Tantra is for bodhisattvas, really. It's good for us to get the imprints. But really, Tantra is you don't enter a mandala unless you're a bodhisattva. And you're not a bodhisattva unless day and night all you do is think about getting sentient beings, freeing sentient beings from suffering, like not anything else, not like the soccer league, like, you know what I mean? Not like, I don't know, all the stuff I think about, music and, you know, what people are doing that I don't even really know. Like those kind of things. Like a bodhisattva doesn't think about that. The bodhisattva only thinks about this day and night. And then it says, a sangha says you can enter a mandala. And you know, when you look at the bodhisattva vow you take, we would almost infer that that means you're now an engaged bodhisattva when you enter that mandala, right? Because you have to have bodhicitta to be a bodhisattva. To get a bodhisattva vow, you have to have bodhicitta and be a bodhisattva. And when you take that, that becomes engaged bodhicitta. Maybe not at that moment. There may be a debate about when the six perfections start. So we'll save that for Love Song also. So does that clarify it at all, Dan?
Yes. Yes, Tuchiche. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. She's so like bitey. It's just a great time.
Dave has a question. He typed it in. Do you want me to read it?
Yeah, please do.
He asks, what does it mean when it is said that the nature of the guru, Yidam, and myself are the same? If the Lama is the Dharmakaya, does that mean my mind is the Dharmakaya too?
Okay, the Rinpoche, the Nga, the Judaji, the Nga Dan Lama, Sam Wo Chip Chip. The Dondagare, Mo Chik.
Mo Chizondavayina, Peyoris.
So it's beneficial to think of that as being then Yoneyin, Yone Omare, Gangasin is this Sheba Kakare. Sheba Kakare. Then it's Sanlo Dang, Sheba Kakamayan, Dutsu de Sheba Kakayomare. So the consciousness itself is different. So Rinpoche said it's beneficial to think you're one with the Lama's, then Lama's mind, then Kontriwa the Chuku, the Dharmakaya, the Lama, the Chuku, Tangye Chuku, Mo Chipa, Nyone Sanodang.
On the page.
Yene then Yone in? Yone Garishene injury. Sheba Kakare. Sheba Kakare, Yomaribe. Oh, so the Mo Cheek.
Mo Cheek.
One nature. Lobsang, are you there? Lobsang La. I don't think he is today, unfortunately.
Mo Cheek is one nature.
Yeah. A little louder?
Yes, Mo-chik means one nature, yes.
Okay, so now, how can my consciousness and your one nature meaning not truly established, or it's this one, the same question as last week. I want to just make sure we have clarity on this.
Well, I don't know if that, I mean, you asked Rinpoche if, I don't know, ask again, is it saying the Dharmakaya is one nature with my mind, or, I mean, I'm not really sure what you asked exactly, honestly.
Okay, Rinpoche, the Ngatsu Gonja, the Judaji Gonja, the Nga Dang Nge, the Lama, Mo Chi, the Chuku, the Lama, the Chuku, you're right, the Nga Dang Lama Chuku, Mo Chik Nyoneyen Sanodan Pembudu.
What do you want that is?
Mo Chik. Then, Nga Dang Chiran Sheba, the Chik, the Mo Chik. Nga Dang Chuku Mo Chik. Okay, so this is going over my heads, but Rinpoche is saying this that. My consciousness and Rinpoche's consciousness are not one nature, but my My consciousness and Dharmakaya are one nature. So David, I would venture to guess that that's not answering your question. If you want to ask it another way, maybe we can start tearing into it. I'm not opposed to it, but I don't understand that, because the Dharmakaya is the cessation or the omniscience. And if I'm the same nature, meaning I have the same potential, I can understand that. But the Rinpoche, the Nyan Sheba Dang Chupu Chi Kade.
Mochi.
Mochi, the Garshane. Garshane Mochi. Danda Gare.
Mojiba. Shibala Susuna. Mo Susuna.
Mo Susuna. Nadu Mepa. The individual nature. Nadu Mepa. Lapsang.
Nang du Mepa. Nang, nang. Nang wa, nang wa. Munsum la nang we tsena. Any so sorry me nang was. No way.
It's translated.
They don't have a separate, they don't have a distinct appearance to direct perception. They don't have a distinct appearance.
Oh, that makes sense. Because the realization is the same, no matter what, right?
I'm not sure that beyond that, I don't know.
Yeah. There's not a distinction between what my cessation and omniscience would be. My future.
There is a distinction. They don't appear distinctly. Like my finger and my hand, when you look at my finger, you see my hands, they don't appear distinctly, right? To the direct perception.
But they are separate. They're not one, Richard said. Yeah, right. They are separate, but they appear. But he said they are, not just appear. He said that they have the same nature.
Right, but what was the reason when you asked why do they have the same nature?
He said, right.
They have a distinct appearance.
I see. Okay, thank you. Yeah, because I said, please give me the correct sign. And then I got, you know, this, and I couldn't understand that last part. So thank you. The appearance. Nangwa. I see, appearance. Yeah, I'm a little slow on my Tibetan. Nangwa, yeah, the appearance, the experience of that, the appearance of it is of one nature. But then you say, I see. Why is it of one nature? Because the appearance is of one nature. Are they singular or plural? Are they singular or separate? They're separate. So there's two distinct entities, correct?
Two distinct phenomena, yes.
Right, phenomena, sure.
I mean, because entity, you can use that to translate ngol, so it just gets confusing.
Oh, that's true. They use that now for ngol.
Sometimes.
I see. Wow, I could just confuse everybody.
I know.
Does that help, David?
So it pertains to the final nature of the the individual consciousness is. They're the same, the lack of true establishment.
Well, the appearance at that time of visualization is that they are the same. But what do you mean? I just want to make sure I ask it properly. So,
I guess what I take it to mean is that the final nature is the same. But as Lobsang La says, it's the appearance of each consciousness's cessation is individual.
Well, maybe you could ask Rinpoche, what's the difference between being the same and being the same nature, so that people can get an understanding of what it means to be the same nature.
Rinpoche, ngo chik dang chik chapagare de kakare. The garshane, the cheek.
Pejeshana Rinpoche, Mochiki, Pejeshana?
Mochi, Pejeshana.
La.
Mochi. That's Gichishe, Mochi. Chi, Mochi. So we ourselves and objects of comprehension are the same nature. Then a cheek.
Cheese in the Tadia my was. Cheese in
Susuichu.
Susu my imbichu.
Susu my imbichu. So if it is singular, it is only that one. So if it's plural, it means that it's one and other. So something, if we say something that is, the classic is impermanence and one, what is that impermanence or functioning thing in one, functioning thing? Posit functioning thing in one, functioning thing. Is functioning thing in one a functioning thing? No, that's where it gets sticky. But so it's just that singular thing. So in order for us to be one with another thing, we would have to be the same. Does that make sense? Because cheek is same or one or singular, it's translated. And then tade is other, meaning it's not just that individual singular one thing. So when we say one nature, we can say we are one nature with objects of comprehension. The subject, us, and objects of comprehension are one nature. Then the ngatsu dang sheja, the ngo chi yinde. Da.
Dani Shiba.
Dani. Dani Sena.
Dani go.
Ha.
Sorry.
Dani Chipa.
Dani Chiba. Mochiba.
Mochiba, because they are the same nature, they're the same entity, I guess. Dani could be entity, right? Now I see how that works. And so I said that the nga dan sheja, the ngo chi yinde, and Rinpoche said dani imbichir. Dachi di imbichir.
Jawa. Dani chi ki jawa, dachi ki. It's just a kind of relationship that they're the relationship of being the same nature.
That's all he said.
But I think for Dave's question, it doesn't have to do with their ultimate nature. I can just say Rinpoche didn't mention anything about the ultimate nature or final. This is the conventional nature that this kind of level.
Okay, thank you very much. That's helpful. Thank you.
Coleman has a question.
Yes, Coleman.
If he's not available, Terry, we can wait until he's available. And we have another question. Terry typed in, regarding Dan's scenario, if we reverse it in order to protect oneself from negative karma of lying, a person tells the Nazis they have Jewish people hiding in the basement. Is there negative karma in knowing that telling the truth in this scenario will result in the murder of the people one is hiding?
I may use just a different example if you don't mind, but Rinpoche, is there any... Rinpoche, the su chupi le, the nu san nga sen nu sen, then the hold on 1 second. I just want to make sure I ask this properly. So I don't think that Lama, the Hitler Shindu, the Jewish Me Mambo, the Sesam.
Yeah.
Then Me Mambo, the Kamba Nala, the Jewish Me, the Roba Chesam.
Yeah.
Then the German army lesson, the Consul Deo Mar. Then this Zun Sheba in a Consul de Ropa Chesma. Then the Gupa Chembo Yuna, in a Zun Mashe, Megewa Sagadue, Gangesena, the Consul Nugare. Then Nga Zun Mashe. Konso nugare, yene the zunche yapiomare, then a denden la, then a konso nuna nga megewa sagdue. Garshine.
Gordon.
Yene the konso nuna.
No, not that the other in the
wizard. Yeah, I'm not, let me just give me a second. I'm a little cooked from the week right now. Rinpoche, the Kamba Nala, the Ropa Yure, then they may lena, the Kong, the Nala Nugu, then Kong Yuna Mena, Lenja Yuna, Kong the Sanchen Nugure, Gutsu son. Nga, the Lenja na, the Rinpoche, the Nga, the May Yuna, the May Genda Lena. The nga kon nugare la. The ne nga the zun mashe. The trouble ne trouble nugare. Zun chena. Deeper death sagare. Yomare. The ne zun mashe. The ne console. The ne trouble nu. The nga deeper sagadue. So he said that there's no reason for an accumulation of non-virtue in that case. There hasn't been an accumulation because you've just told the truth. But it depends now. Was your intention, did you have harmful intent? Or were you just telling the truth? So that's where it gets sticky, right? The gray area. I'm not having a great time with communicating simple details right now. So
Coleman's no longer with us, so we don't have his question. And Dan raised his hand. Are you able to answer another question?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay. Tsuchi my question is about, so now clarifying a bit more about the nature of karma, it seems to me that it makes sense that in order to accumulate a certain karma, you have to have awareness of what you're doing. So say, for example, like if a person like presses a button and they are told that to press this button, you will help.
There for a second. Really detailed examples like that are going to be really hard for me to convey. Like I just saw me trying to do like something pretty simple. Now we're like pressing a button. When Rinpoche in hypotheticals, even when there's someone here that's like rip roaring speaking Tibetan, is like, oh, that happened? Why? Who'd that happen to? Are they okay? Like it's really So.
I'll just say this, the actual question itself. Then the question is, to what extent does awareness of what it is that you're doing when you're doing an action, cause karma? Maybe like another example would be like the simpler is like if a person sees a bee. And the bee is going to like, you know, maybe the person is like, has an allergy or something, the bee is going to sting the child. So the mother wants to kill the bee because that would be the smallest amount of chance of, so I don't know, maybe not an example, maybe just the general question itself. Okay. So like what,
The mother's going to create karma of killing and then something good for wanting to help the child. I mean, it's what he already answered.
Okay, but then, but like, for example, if someone didn't know that they were doing harm to someone, how does that cause karma for them? Like, if someone didn't know that what they were doing was actually like hurting the environment or anything, like until they actually got the information, why would that cause negative karma for them?
Rinpoche, the Tsuchupa Le, the Tsuchupa Le Yabiyomare Mashina, the Tsuchupa Le Sagadwe.
Tsuchupa Le Sagadwe.
Nene Gulum Ke Champudu Gulum.
Okay, so this.
Nene the Chambo Dien Chungo. The Drabudwe.
Drabudwe.
So then, the name the Golong Garishene Kechempu, the not the Suchu, the I'm just trying to think of an example where you wouldn't the.
So I have an example potentially, like let's say maybe.
Let me work on it. Let me just work on this. I know the question you're asking, so let me just work on it. Let me work it out here. More information won't necessarily help.
Then
the Rinpoche, the Golong Kechempu, then the Nga Suchu. The sentient, then the Ducha Shedan, Timu, the Chiku, then the Suchuna, then Jesu Yeronwa. Jesu Yeronwa Mena, Dan the Dupa Mena, Gulum Mena, the Suchupi Le Sagadue. Suchuna. Then the Depo Garde.
I don't know what Chibu Nyawa.
So it really just depends upon the degree. No matter what, if you engage in non-virtue, it creates that. That's an action. So you've created it. You've done it. You've completed an action, whether it's through your body, killing, stealing, or sexual misconduct, through your speech of lying, harsh words, gossip, or lying, harsh words, gossip, or divisive speech, sorry, or it's through your mind of harmful intent, covetousness, or wrong view. Once those actions are executed through your body, speech, and mind, karma means action in Sanskrit. It just means action. So you've engaged in an action, but that action has degrees of result. Those actions have degrees of result, and that's when motivation and post-event kind of mental state come into play. So what Rinpoche and I were talking about is when you engage in, for instance, the act of killing, you have to first have this some sort of desire to kill that has some sort of connection, it says in text, to the three poisons a lot of times, to attachment, hatred, or ignorance. So you have this desire to kill. And they say, like, where could ignorance be? Like, there's some, like, rituals of killing in other traditions, like of giving blood, you know, where, you know, so any among those kind of negativities, attachment for flesh, so you kill, or anger, so you kill, or you have ignorance, you kill, you think it's an offering, or you think killing is somehow virtue. So then you kill. So that's the first step. And then you kill it, whatever that thing is. And what does that mean? You've separated a sentient being from its life. So they were alive, and now based on what you just did, they're not. You've separated from them from their life force. And then after it's done, you rejoice in having done it. That's how you create the largest amount of karma related to killing. But if Rinpoche said, if you don't have that, you know, desire, but still kill, right? And you don't rejoice. You've still killed something. You've still created the karma of killing. And I said, what does that produce? He said, the lower realms, hell, hungry, ghost, and human, depending on the degree. So karma is not, you know, a great story, but it is the story, you know? And once you find out, I mean, there's a lot of things we're doing all day. We're accumulating karmas. We're creating virtue, non-virtue, or that which hasn't been presented in scripture, karma, neutral karma. So with that, why don't we do the dedications? We do have somewhere to go, which I'm really looking forward to. I'm just kidding. I'm just really. So let's do the concluding mandal offering and dedication prayer and so forth. The fundamental ground is scented with incense and strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, the four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha land and offer it. May all sentient beings enjoy this pure realm. I dedicate whatever virtues I've collected for the benefit of the teachings and of all sentient beings, and in particular for the essential teachings of Venerable Lozandrapa to shine forever. I send forth this jeweled mandala to you, precious Guru. I dedicate all this virtue to emulate the knowledge of the Guru Manjushri and likewise Samantabhadra as well. With whatever dedication is praised as supreme by all the conquerors who traverse the three times, I also dedicate all my roots of virtue for the sake of auspicious deeds. In that pure land surrounded by snowy mountains, you are the source of all benefit and happiness, all powerful Avalokiteshvara Tenzin Gyatso. May you stay until samsara's end. I pray for the long life of the precious Khenpo Wangdok, upholder of scriptural and realizational doctrines, the spiritual friend who trained extensively in the five great philosophical texts with exceptional wisdom and perseverance. So thank you everybody for coming, and you know, hopefully we got some of your questions answered. I apologize for times when I can't convey things, and